Good morning, everyone. You are listening to The Leaves of a Victim Nevermore with Stephen Wilson. I am Stephen Wilson. I am an adult survivor of childhood sex abuse, and I'm a drug user. This podcast is meant for people who identify as victims of abuse or addiction. A form of therapy, I guess. At least that's the way it started. Today's reading, I go back to an oldie but a goodie, Theodore Rettke. The poem, The Shape of Fire. One. What's this? A dish for fat lips. Who says? A nameless stranger. Is he a bird or a tree? Not everyone can tell. Water recedes to the crying of spiders. An old scowl bumps over black rocks. A cracked pod calls. Mother me out of here. What more will the bones allow? Will the sea give the wind suck? A toad falls into a stone. These flowers are all fangs. Comfort me, fury. Wake me, witch. We'll do the dance of rotten sticks. Shale loosens. Marl reaches into the field. Small birds pass over water. Spirit, come near. This is only the edge of whiteness. I can't laugh at a procession of dogs. In the hour of ripeness, the tree is barren. The she-bear mopes under the hill. Mother, mother, stir from the cave of sorrow. A low mouth laps water. Weeds, weeds, how I love you. The arbor is cooler. Farewell, farewell, found worm. The worm comes without sound. Two. Where's the eye? The eye is in the sty. The ear is not here, beneath the hair. When I took off my clothes to find a rose, to find a nose, there was only one shoe for the waltz of two, the pinch of wear. Time for the flat-headed man. I recognize that listener. Him with the platitudes and rubber donuts, melting at the knees of varicose horror. Hello, hello. My nerves know you, dear boy. Have you come to unhinge my shadow? Last night I slept in the pits of a tongue. The silver fish ran in and out of my special bindings. I grew tired of the ritual of names and the assistant keeper of the mollusk. Up over a viaduct, I came to the snakes and sticks of another winter. A two-legged dog hunting a new horizon of howls. A wind sharpened itself on a rock. A voice sang, pleasure on ground has no sound. Easily maddens the uneasy man who, careless, slips and coiling ooze is strapped to the lips, leaves more than shoes, must pull off clothes to jerk like a frog on belly and nose from the sucking bog. My meat eats me. Who waits at the gate? Mother of courts, your words writhe into my ear. Renew the light, lewd whisper. Three. The wasp waits. The edge cannot eat the center. The grape glistens. The path tells little to the serpent. An eye comes out to the wave. The journey from flesh is longest. A rose sways least. The Redeemer comes a dark way. Four. Morning fair, follow me further back. into that minnowy world of weeds and ditches, when the herons floated high over the white houses, and the little crabs slipped into slivery craters. When the sun for me glinted the sides of a sand grain, and my intent stretched over the buds at their first trembling. That air and shine, and the flicker's loud summer call, the bearded boards in the stream, and all of the apples, the glad hen on the hill, and the trellis humming, death was not. I lived in a simple drowse. Hands and hair moved through a dream of wakening blossoms. Rain sweetened the cave, and the doves still called. The flowers leaned on themselves. The flowers and hollows, and love, love, sang toward. That was the poem, The Shape of Fire, written by Theodore Rettke. You know, the more I do this, I have to tell you that although at first I thought the format was a bit selfish, maybe even a little bit pedestrian, in coming up with these podcasts, it has forced me to revisit some of the writers. It's not really that I had forgotten them. They were here. They were on some of my bookshelves. But I guess they were sleeping. I spent a great deal of time getting to know Theodore Rettke when I was in college. Regardless where I went, he went with me. Okay, what are we going to do this time around? Well, life is metaphor for life. It was true for the Greek, and maybe it's true now. Maybe. But today's show is about dealing with all of these things that we identify as being difficult. And holistically, we're talking about life itself. And when people say that life is a storm or the rough water, for those people that have never been on water, the analogy doesn't really work. Because I have been through a storm at sea, once deep sea fishing when I was a child, and again in my early 20s. And when you've got swells 10, 15, 18 feet high, where you actually lose the horizon in the swell, the water is taller than you, you never thought anything could be that cold. You never really think about water being violent. You never think about water having the ability to offend. But when you're on that bow and you're going back and forth and people are vomiting and you want to run inside the cabin, you look to the captain and you wonder, how did we get here? Because theoretically, in this day and age, you have the ability to forecast a storm, especially in open water. So when you have somebody at the wheel, and you find yourself in this storm, bad weather, you find yourself in a bad way. You went out there to enjoy yourself, and now you find yourself dealing with things that you didn't think that you were going to have to deal with. Not yet. But it is there. And the idea that people say that addiction is, well, it is a storm. The war on drugs. Think about the word war. That war now, I mean, you think about conflict. my team against your team, that team against that team. I don't really have a dog in this hunt. Well, what are you hunting? So you can replace their flag with yours? You change the lines on a map? You think about the people of the Ukraine and what they're going through right now. Vladimir Putin, he wants to turn back the clock. He wants to go back to the borders of the original Russia. You have to remember that so many Russians over the age of 60, they still remember the Soviet Union. That's where they grew up. And now they have somebody that's obviously a little bit of a nutball. But he realizes that he's at the end of his life. He's not at the beginning, and so he wants to get it done. You don't really need a crystal ball for that. But you think about what it is not only to be an American, but to be a human. We know in group dynamics that the human pathology can get used to anything if they're around it long enough. I'm sure you might agree with that, but you won't do it publicly. You do it privately. Because nobody wants to admit that they're that weak. And it is a sign of weakness because it is a form of adaptation. Because when you're in that situation and you look around and you hear the explosions, you hear the screams, you may not be a soldier, but you're in war. Maybe you didn't want war. But Vladimir Putin, he put you in war. And everybody, they want to believe that their world leader, they want to believe that their president or their king or their prime minister, they're not going to tolerate such things. We're going to intervene and we're going to shut this thing down and we're going to save lives. And I have to tell you that I've always had a problem, even when I was in school. And I mean, I know that I had matriculated and I was up in front of a bunch of students and I was telling them what's what. But I always had a problem with this infatuation with safety. Now, even when you're an undergrad and you deal with Maslow and you're okay, safety, okay. But what is it about safety that makes everything else possible? I don't understand why it is that you believe in prevention. You want to live a life without harm. That's total bullshit, because that's not possible. You think that you're going to get through life without breaking your heart. You think that you're going to get through life without sweating or crying or being cut or bleeding. You're not going to get a bruise. I mean, you have to ask yourself, how stupid are you? How goofy are you? Because that's not real. There is no empirical data throughout history where there has been a human that has been on the ground, knee-deep in the blood and guts of living a life, in the storm, on the bow, both hands clenched on the pipe, and the boat goes back and forth, disappearing into the water and then comes up to the crest. Yeah, it is true that the water could swallow the boat. In doing so, you're done. It is true that those explosions you believe so far away, they could be right in your home. They could be right with you, and you're done. And there are so many of you that still believe that prevention is a viable way to live a life. Stephen, I can get through this whole thing unscathed. No scab, no scarring, no bruise, no wound, nothing. Well, I hate to break it to you, but in my travels, and I have been all over, in my education, in the case studies, in the dossiers, in my internships, I have never found anybody that's been able to pull that off. You see the crap on TV. You see the rubble of what used to be a house or a building. You see a young mom holding a baby, crying, reaching out for what appears to be a box of food. Everybody just wants to be safe. And you are so quick to call it a war. I've never understood where that came from. Growing up in the 70s and the 80s, having to deal with people like Nancy Reagan and say, war on drugs, just say no. Why not say yes? I mean, drugs, we are a biochemical creature, and things that alter us, we do them because they work. For those people that followed baseball in the 1990s, that steroid use was overt. Anybody that had a half a brain, they knew that that firm in California, they knew that they were jacking up the Oakland A's. Everybody knew it. I mean, obviously, Canseco writing a book, okay. Yeah, but duh. The guy's a twin. And his twin is half his size. Of course he's on steroids. He's a walking caricature of a human being. And you know what? You still bought the ticket. You still bought his jersey. You still bought the banner. You still bought the hat. You were cheering for him the whole time. Because the steroids turned him into a ball player that you could cheer for. Everything that he did on that field worked for you. And you think about his teammate, Mark McGwire. Oh, well, his brother's in the NFL. He's supposed to do those things. Bam, bam. He swings that bat, and it's magic. 450, 500, 550-foot home run. Roger Maris' record already had an asterisk, so you didn't have a problem glazing over that. Oh, no. We don't even know Maris. It's too old. We need something new. We need a reason to buy that ticket. Bud Selig had that information way back when the union went through the strike. But he did nothing about it until the damage was done. Because the greatest offense took place against Henry Aaron. The man who surpassed Babe Ruth, the man who dethroned God. Barry Bonds, all jacked up on steroids, pissed all over Henry Aaron, and you did nothing. You still bought the ticket, you still bought the jersey, you still bought the hat, and you cheered for him the whole fucking time. How convenient that your war on drugs goes after the hard stuff. Somebody heats a spoon and you got a problem with it. Now look, you need to get those people out the street. What they're doing in that back alley, it frightens me. Well, tobacco alters human brain. So does alcohol. Alcohol destroys liver. You apparently don't have a problem with people smoking. There are people that actually vape that think that they're doing nothing wrong to their body. Well, I stopped smoking cigarettes. All I do is vape. Well, that's super, moron. But you pick and choose, don't you? You're so quick to send me something and say, Stephen, you know, you really need to stop telling people that you take drugs. Why? When I say it into the microphone, it just falls to the floor. Of course, I published this, but it doesn't really mean anything. Because you keep acting as if I've done something wrong. I've offended your sensibilities because of what? Like I owe you something. Wasted talent, wasted intellect. According to whom? You know, the way that you keep score is so fucked up. It's not even worth glancing up to the scoreboard. You manipulate outcomes. And you say, Stephen, you see, this life would be better if you were sober. No, this life would be better if I had not been raped. This life would be better if I had been left alone. But that life, that tangent, does not exist. So if somebody needs to get breast augmentation, if somebody needs to jump out of a plane that there's mechanically nothing wrong, if they need to do these things to get a rush, if somebody needs to hit a bong, if somebody needs to do a line, what business is it of yours? You think that life is so easy that you go through it clean. Well, I don't need to escape, but you do. You listen to a podcast, you listen to somebody that has something to say, or at least they think it's worth hearing. You put on makeup, you buy expensive clothing, you put on another costume. You went to the ballpark and you told yourself that you did nothing wrong. You had nothing to do with that drug use. Steroids aren't even really a drug. People with muscular dystrophy are given prednisone. Prednisone is a drug. People with COPD are given prednisone. Prednisone is a steroid. It is a drug. But you talk about marijuana, you talk about heroin, cocaine, LSD. Well, can't do it. This was a good talk. So when I go to the bar and I get my shots and I get my gin and tonic and I get my beer, I'll think about you and all the things that you're doing wrong. War. War on what? If I thought it worthwhile, I would begin a war on safety. I would begin a war on prevention. You should be willing to embrace chaos. I do everything I can to get people to read Emma Goldman, to raise the flag of anarchia. Maybe there is something to it. The teacher turned me away from authority forever. But it is what it is. I'm here now. I am selfish. I am a hedonist. I live in the raw. But I don't see it as being a marginal human. Because you put me there. Because we are at war. The very moment that you said war on drugs, it was you and I. You don't know it, but indirectly we are enemies. And for me, the line of sight is the crest of water. A body of water that has consumed the horizon and any kind of future that might have been. I am in the swell. And as I go down, I go up. But eventually, my hands release the rail. And I am left to the device. I am a bobber in the water. I give myself to the storm. Because I am not afraid. We all die, but very few live. And I know that I cannot breathe when I go beneath the water. I will drown. And it's not that my strength has given way. I am not ashamed. What I do with a full heart. My hands are unclenched, and the rail is getting soaked from the ocean spray. and you keep wondering if the bow will hold. Every time it comes down and it slaps against the water. The shock comes to your ankle, then to your knee, then to your hip. And it doesn't really matter if your eyes are open or closed, you hang your head or you point it towards the sky. Even if I could fly away, I'm not. I am not a bird. I'm a tree. I'm a tree on the front of a ship. And it survives only on the whim of the water. I let go, not because the strength of my hands gave in. It's because I wanted to. Leave me in the storm. Leave me alone. Well, that's all I have. Maybe too much. I don't know. You've been listening to the podcast, The Leaves of a Victim Nevermore, with Stephen Wilson. My name is Stephen Wilson. May you be a blessing, and may you find serenity.